Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in.
Hello, good afternoon, everyone. Today is October 21st, and I want to thank everybody for being here this afternoon. I'm your host, John Anderson, along with Deborah Hunt. Good afternoon, Deborah. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you, John.
Great. Thank you for being here tonight. We have a really special guest tonight with Dr. Jamie Romo from San Diego. And before we get to him, we wait on him to call in just a few minutes, I want to go ahead and just take this time, to really tell you a little bit more about what NASCA does, and also to let you know about the scan, okay? The scan number is 2774, okay? And what a great way to introduce something which stands for Stop Child Abuse Now. And that's going to happen, and that is happening, and what a great way just to bring in anything. And so tonight is the scan number 2774, and as we go through the show later today, tonight, I do want to take this opportunity, first of all, to thank everybody associated with NASCA to giving me this opportunity to be here tonight, especially on a birthday at that, and that's tomorrow. So thank everyone, Bill and Penelope, Deborah, for being here, and every one of us that's associated with NASCA, and of course, Carol, I can't leave her out, of course, else, if I don't mention your name, hey, it is what it is, but, this is Kim and Tamika, we can go down the list and down the list, but anyway, you all, I've just learned to love each and every one of y'all, and I just want to take this opportunity to tell you all that, and thanks for this, this wonderful time. NASCA is to me, and I'm sure a lot of people can agree with this, is probably one of the greatest organizations that's ever existed and will continue to be at that level. NASCA is setting platforms for everyone around the world, and especially for the main people, and these are the victims and survivors, Deborah, I mean, this is where it has to has to come into play with allowing us to get the message out, And two, the education part that NASCA provides is just unbelievable. And that's what I want to tell you a little bit more about here is that, NASCA stands for the NASCA Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, okay? And we are a nonprofit. And, we're basically, supporting, just through our own contributors. I mean, and this is why whenever you decide if you ever want to donate to a cause, NASCA is the cause. And we have such a wonderful program here to offer. And, and basically we have a single purpose at NASCA, and that's to address all the issues related to child abuse, okay? And including the trauma in the assault, the violence, just every piece of part of anything to do with this. And there's so many levels of it. And Deborah, I mean, look at it. You're talking about trauma. Yeah. You're talking about neglect, isolation, depression, yeah. PTSD. We can go on and on and on what the reasons are behind what we do. But I think the number one purpose is probably educating the public. Especially, is in a society that has learned to, come on to where we are today as far as the level of showing, the pandemic that it is. I mean, it's a worldwide problem. Yes. It affects everybody. Okay. Not only does it affect the actual person, it affects their family, it affects their friends, everyone, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, and with that too, I guess the most important part of that is to try to help people to come forward, you know. And I think that's probably the most difficult time in their lives is for them to take that step. And that's what NASC is here for, you know. We're all here. And,
yeah.
and to let you know, you can remain anonymous, too, if that's what it's going to take. I mean, you know, we have call-in phone numbers, in which I'm going to let y'all know. It's area code 425. I'm sorry, it's 646-595-2118, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And if not, you can always go on your cell phone and pull up the NASCA.org, NASCA.org, and on there, mm-hmm. all you have to do is punch on the little mic, and and you're in, you know, basically. So you can listen wherever you are, which is great. And we always right. welcome in anyone. I guess the next step with everything that we do here at NASC is to offer hope and healing, okay? So,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's a lot of paths, you know, that people have to go through. And, you know, the information that we provide, okay, is never going to let anyone down as far as looking for answers, okay? Because
yeah.
we have too much experience. We have too many people that are associated with every level. And, Deborah, look, we have professionals. We have attorneys. We have
yep,
people
sure do.
That are doctors. We have people that have 60 years of experience with dealing with
yeah.
every phase of this, including fostering, you know, and things of this nature. So
yeah.
we don't end at any
Beautiful.
Of abuse,
yeah.
any kind of it, you know, and we are here
yeah.
to help. And that's our number one thing. You know, but with that being said, is that it's never an easy time for someone to come forward. It never is an easy time. Mm-hmm. So if there's a way that we can, you know, be there for you, maybe by personal messaging or something like that nature, we're always going to be here for you, okay? So, you know, with that being said, there's so many different areas that NASC has to offer, and we also do it in Spanish. How about that? You know, a lot of times,
yeah.
you know, people may see something and the communication might not be there. And I've seen that many times where certain words, they take one way and don't mean another. And then it gets confusing. And, you know, so that's just
yeah.
a great thing, too. I mean, having that available
yeah.
to you. And there's so many different things that NASC has to offer, though. And there's the community things that we do. It's just mm-hmm. the we are. Now I say national? No, that is not the case anymore. We are international,
We are worldwide.
All over the world. New Zealand, Australia, Africa. You know, I have many friends now down in these areas because of NASC. And and with that, you know, I have to thank NASC for that too. Because, you know, and along with you, Deb, I think you can agree too, and I think Penelope and Bill and everybody that's a part of the NASC program is that whenever somebody, you know, joins the NASC family, okay, well, that means that they had an opportunity to come on to the show, all right? And for as many times as I've been either a co-host or just on the show or just being a listener, I have never heard of one of negative outcome, you know, of a person being on the NASC show, okay, after they were given the opportunity to tell a story, okay? Now, let's reemphasize on telling this story because, you know, that could be the first
yeah.
time that they've ever been on that type of platform or scale, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you know
yep.
they're going to be nervous. You know that things
uh-huh.
Might not go exactly the way they want it to, but that's what we're here for. You know, we can jump in and help them out along the way and help mm-hmm. tell their story for them in so many words and making them feel
yeah.
comfortable about telling it too.
Exactly,
you know?
John. Yeah.
So,
yeah,
so
you
how
know
do you
what,
feel
John,
about
I
that?
Think that In saying that, I think that that's one thing that when I came on over 3 years ago and told my story for the first time on air, now I've obviously spoke to other people, but it was the first time I told my story on air, and yeah, those nerves and, mm-hmm. and you know, you're kind of doubting whether you should or not. That's the beautiful thing about NASCA is that you have that comfort because everybody who is here that comes on has told their story. And it just brings so much comfort to you knowing that they understand exactly what you're going through because you've gone through it yourself. And all of us here have. I'm sure you have. I know you have, John. And, you know, it's just a very beautiful thing that we hold each other as a family and support each other in order to get through this and start working and start educating. So with that being said, I know that we're going to be bringing on Dr. Jaime Romo from San Diego in just a moment here. He is a consultant and an educator, an author, and a minister, and he promotes prevention and healing from child sexual abuse. So particularly with the abuse of religious authorities or context of religious settings. John, I know we have Jaime on the air, correct?
That's true, yes. Dr. Romo is here. And before I introduce Dr. Romo in, I do want to again thank everybody for joining us tonight and thank Dr. Romo for joining us also. We have a very, very special guest tonight. Dr. Romo is from San Diego, okay? And basically, you know, he does it all when it comes down to everything that we stand for here at NASCA. I mean, you know, he's an educator, consultant, author, minister. I mean, that's to me is vitally important to doing what we do, you know? And he basically really promotes and what we really live for here at NASCA is the prevention and healing from child sex abuse. And he actually, you know, what I like about Dr. Romo, too, is that he actually specializes in the area of clergy, you know. So that's
right.
A big, you know, conversation piece that we can get, you know, just started on. And we never have enough time. So without any further ado, I'm going to go ahead and bring Dr. Romo in. Hello, Dr.
Hello.
Romo. How
you
doing, Dr.
Can you hear
Romo? Yeah.
I'm well. Thank you. Sorry, a bit late.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. Thank you for being here tonight. It really means a lot to us. Really does. Yeah, so I was telling them a little bit about, you know, your intro on your biography. And, you know, there's so much to talk about, Dr. Romo, is that, you know, we all stand for the same thing here. And and you are taking it to levels that a lot of people only cherish and really admire you for being that type of leader, especially in a community where it means so much, you know. So, you know, this is your show for tonight, and I know that you have been a part of the NASCA family before. So with the way we normally work here at NASCA is to try to do it in a, like a chronological type format. You know, however, this is a question and answer type, you know, call-in discussion tonight, okay? So, you know, without knowing, you know, everybody doesn't really know about your past history, maybe if you could just fill us in a little bit on the earlier days and not spend so much time on the actual events, unless you don't want to, it's up to you. But I would really like to get more into the discussions that maybe you have on your mind, okay, and other things that I have some questions about. I'm sure that Deborah will also, okay?
Yeah,
and thank you so much for calling in.
Sure, and I'll just start by saying my role currently, and that's why I'm a little bit late, I'm a hospice chaplain. I never expected to be in this role. And I used to be a professor, but my own kind of trauma that surfaced after 30 years pushed me really to, at first I thought I was going to get through everything unscathed, right? Just be an advocate and do good things and write good things because I had the skill set and background, but it was too much too soon. And so that really launched me into a lot of pain and healing work and learning. Along the way, learned a lot of good things, but came into this role with my dad several years ago, and all that's to say I was late because, you know, I was with patients.
Uh-huh.
And
so you were actually working
with, that,
with
I guess,
your dad?
No. Well, years ago when he was in hospice, yeah, he passed several years ago.
Okay.
But,
okay, I'm sorry.
That,
okay.
The idea was that was life-changing. You know, the disruption with all the, you know, the abuse that surfaced after so many years was disruptive. And it has kind of landed me here, but not, this isn't an end point. So I'll back up in a minute with some background. But just to say where I am and where I guess I'd like to offer a discussion theme or, you know, point tonight is really about wholeness. You know, like of course we have trauma. Of course we have things that are infuriating and, you know, should not happen to people. They come to us, we're exposed to things. We've got developmental trauma. We've got all kinds of experiences. And then there's layers of shame and that keep us, I think, locked in kind of self-sabotaging and self-destructive and other destructive behaviors. So that's a given, right? We didn't
right.
like necessarily create or, you know, ask for what happened, but we have no responsibility. And so I'm very much like not Pollyanna-ish. I'm speaking, I think, from a place of integration, of being counterintuitive and going, you know, needing to acknowledge, needing to see what we're carrying around in order to be able to work through it. So
Well,
I'll get to this awesome poem in a moment. I will let's just say real quickly the background is I grew up in a Mexican neighborhood pretty much. Dad had a second grade education because when he was a child and all his siblings were born in the U.S., Hoover during the Depression basically made an agreement to boot out people they thought were, you know, not citizens. And my dad's family were citizens, but they were booted anyway. So he had that disruption. I point to that as a point of, you know, generational or historical trauma. And then, you know, grew up with his alcoholism and violence, and that was another kind of trauma. And so school for me was my safe place. And I went to a Catholic school. My family was very religious and devout. And that's where I was groomed and sexually abused by a priest. And all that, you know, experience was disconnected for different reasons. There was alcohol, and so that impairs memory. There was deep shame. There was like this overwhelming inability to understand, you know, these experiences so young. And so I channeled my rage really through sport and through being competitive, whether it was in the classroom or, you know, on the field, soccer field. And that worked in some ways. You know, I went to Stanford, disconnected from a lot of things. And then I had an incredible conversion experience, spiritual thing, and went to seminary for a few years. So it was kind of nuts that I had this abuse by clergy, but I was in this environment and very disconnected from it, but totally zealous and totally focused on being spiritual. And it wasn't until dealing with
the layers of
alcoholism.
So did you do that for a particular reason? Did you do that for a particular reason? Like, were you wanting to go into it, or did it just said, hey, this is for me, because you wanted to make things right?
You mean
where I'm coming from with that? Yeah.
It was a very dramatic story, like way too long to open with. There were a series of events that were very extraordinary that I thought I heard a voice. I had these strong impressions that God was talking to me. I was not interested. I said, if things happen three times this crazy, maybe I'll consider. So it was kind of that. And then I still planned to not stay. I thought, okay, I will go, but I'm going to leave because I know this is not right for me. And because I had a plan, I was going to get married.
Right.
I was going to do other things. It was for me, maybe strong-willed. I needed strong things to
get
me out of what I thought I was doing or knowing. So all that's to say, you know, my educational path was had a good trajectory. I was a teacher education professor for years, and then things blew up when clergy abuse issues
right.
were raised in 2002 in Boston. So
mm-hmm.
all that's to say, yeah, we're all dealing with layers of things, things that happen to us, things that happen generationally. And we don't often find good support. And so that's why I, I'm happy to be a part of this group, just to
hold
the space.
We're so happy to have you too, Doc. You really are. And so you're writing poems?
Oh, no, this is not my poem. This is a poem from, I think it's Hafez, who's a 16th century Persian, is it 16th century, poet. And so I'll just read it. It says, I read this to my team this morning, my hospice team, because everybody's dealing with difficult things, you know, grief and trauma and so on. So the poem says, I sometimes forget, created for joy. My mind is too busy. My heart is too heavy. Heavy for me to remember that I have been called to dance the sacred dance for life. I was created to smile, to love, to be lifted up and lift others up. O sacred one, untangle my feet from all that ensnares. Free my soul that we might dance and that our dancing might be contagious. So that's where I am today.
It does say a lot. Absolutely.
Yeah, it does. I really like that. Well,
so when you read it to your team, where did they respond?
They just said thank you. I mean, it resonated with, like, we're confronted, we're in this field of dealing with people who are at the end of life and families who are overwhelmed and people who are facing, they're scared in some cases, right? Or they're, you know, they've lived a life of being angry and they're angry now. And you know, this is a caring team that's exposed to that. Plus, everybody's got our own life experiences that are challenging. And so they said, yeah, thank
that's
you.
That's true.
We need this reminder, you know.
It is. That's exactly what it is. And thank you for doing that, because that's what it takes on a daily basis, though, doesn't it? It's a reminder, you know, and to know that somebody is there for you and that you're not alone, too, you know. You know, as we go on in the show, I know, Doctor, you have a lot of things ahead of you here. I know that you have your workbook. And I want to talk more about that. And I want to talk. I'm really interested in learning about this TIR facilitator, okay? Facilitator that you're doing. That is
absolutely
very expensive.
That.
Yeah. So
yeah,
you
know,
I know that there's a lot of things
that
you want to talk about, and whatever which way you want to talk about it is fine with me. I know you want to focus on wholeness tonight, and I'm good with that too. So we have a lot to talk about then, right? So we have to get it out. You know? And we only have a short amount of time. There's never enough time, never enough time. So, you know,
right.
If you would like to, why don't we focus on you know, the wholeness part for right now? And then about halfway through the show, maybe we'll let the second half with the healing and the workbook and everything go from there. Does that sound good to you all? Okay.
Excellent for me. Good.
So what? So you're bringing up the word wholeness. Okay. So what is that in detail to you, and what does it mean to other people?
Well, it's I would say it's our best state, our natural state. You know, when our physical self is connected with our emotional self, and it's connected with a deeper sense of self, call it spiritual, our deepest sense of who we are. And we can get disconnected frequently through stress, right? because stress hormones go through us, and and that's where people get dysregulated, right? Your heartbeat goes faster, and adrenaline things go, and so there's a disconnect. And in extreme cases, people may dissociate. So we have these things regularly that are disconnecting. So wholeness is really, you know, maintaining that state of being connected, and then that's with ourselves, right? And I think that allows and having boundaries that are, you know, what's the word I think of? They're not wide open and they're not rigid. They're kind of permeable. Mm-hmm. They're somewhat flexible, but they contain us, right? And
right.
I know with trauma, with all kinds of abuse, our boundaries, you know, can be really messed up and be too rigid or too open. And so that's another part of wholeness is, like, we have this sense of self, boundaries around ourselves that we show in mm-hmm. how we treat our body or relationships. And then our mind as well that, you know, and this relates to TIR, that's all about, okay. like, not being controlled by our mind and our thoughts and, you know, all the things that race automatically, but mm-hmm. having a better integration between, like, I am good, the world is good, like, bad things happen, but my mind, I'm like managing my mind. I'm not like getting caught up in, you know, all these other things that that fear may project mm-hmm. or past experience yeah. may project. So then it extends outward, right? So then having this sense of connection with others, and I think that shows up most in compassion,
right.
which is tough. It's not a small thing. It's not for sissies.
I think Deborah can really agree on that situation too. That we, you know, we work together. We go through this every day. You know, Deborah, you want to comment on that alone? You know, just that. I mean, that's extensive. It really, really is.
Oh, you know,
what he's doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, going with that, the traumatic incident reduction, even that, you know, when you're trying to say the compassion in that or being strong through that, because, you know, sometimes you actually deal with that, the traumatic incident, and mm-hmm. you try to be too strong. And without that balance,
that's right.
Or that wholeness that you're talking about, it's just a really fine line that you walk every day and that you have to remind yourself of every day. And I'm really
right.
interested in hearing more about this workshop because that sounds like something I would love to be a part of.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's just go ahead and get on to that, if you're ready for that.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know if it's on the website at all. I know I sent it to Bill, and so I would hopefully he or I could forward it. Maybe somebody can, like, text me how I could do that. But
I have it right here.
This is a – oh, you have the flyer?
No, not the flyer, but I actually have your healing, the sexualabusehard.com. So, yeah. I mean, that's one way they can get in touch with you if they had to do it.
Yeah, and under the tab that says, like, traumatic – and it's either trauma-informed care, I think, there's –
uh-huh.
You know, the sign-up part, but there's I'll tell you about
right.
it.
Okay.
And I think it coincides, back to integration, it coincides with reconnecting with parts and relationships of past with the present. So years ago, I got connected with, I was doing a lot of public, you know, advocacy work, and that's what led to PTSD. But I connected with SAMHSA to do some work, you know, around trauma, like being lived experience. This is, you know, the dynamics that set up abuse, and here's what I'm learning about the healing process. And I got connected with a group called Males for Trauma Recovery. And we presented, actually, to SAMHSA, to Substance Abuse and Health Services, behavioral, so substance abuse and behavioral services, And we talked to them about what the symptoms are that we often deal with while missing the underlying trauma that leads to these behaviors, that leads eventually to physical, call it decline or problems or disease,
right?
As well as emotional behavioral. And that was something happened where the plug got pulled, and that team basically didn't meet for 9 years. And I talked to that team saying, hey, they're about trying to find ways to promote healing and to expand the conversation about to on one hand, deconstruct patriarchy, which and this toxic masculinity, which does so much harm and has, and at the same time, raise the understanding that males also carry lots of shame and trauma, which leads to all kinds of toxic masculinity and damage, you know, to people around. So there's this reconnecting with that group, and that's the group that introduced me to the Trauma Resolution Center in Miami like 10 years ago.
Okay.
And that's where I experienced TIR and then, you know, got certified. And that was the most positive thing that helped to clear old triggers that I didn't even realize I was still carrying around.
Right.
And
so you are certified now.
And it's,
right.
Well, I'm certified as a facilitator, but I'm going to be my workshop is in November, two weekends, 6th and the 7th, and the 13th and 14th.
Well, while we're on
that,
that's
part of my trainer certification.
Anything that I can do to help you, anything that we can do to help you, we are here, okay?
Well, thank you. I mean, the short-term plan, and then I raised – thank you. The short-term plan is become a certified trainer, not just certified facilitator. So that way we can have, you know, many more people knowing about and, you know, skillfully using something that is really powerful. That is my experience is it's more effective than talk therapy. And, you know, because that gets at what we're aware of. But it doesn't get at what's behind the behavior, what's behind the triggers.
Right.
And it's, you know, there was a time where I was so like emotionally frazzled that I dragged myself, you know, to a psychiatrist and I said, you know, I need something to help balance me out because I'm like up and down. And I did medication for a year. So I don't, you know, put that down. I just, that was helpful at that time. But the medical model of just prescribing things to manage symptoms or to have a system that's a pain management system, not a healing healthcare system is not the best way.
Exactly.
So this really got at some of the underlying stuff and cleared the symptoms. So it doesn't mean like that I'm perfect or that I've got, you know, no reactions or things to learn. But but there's a big difference.
And listen, why are you bringing that up? I want to bring one thing up about that is that you know that when people deal with different types of therapies, okay, yes, you know, they have to go to a psychologist or psychotherapist or if medication is introduced into them, that's one thing, okay? But now on the therapist side, how do you feel about the therapist themselves? In other words, you might have a person, I'll use myself as an example. I'm a male, 55 years old. I'm going to a therapist for the first time. I'm not sure what to do. Is it going to be right for me? And what about this therapist themselves? Okay, is this therapist for me? Okay, how do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, I think it's kind of mixed. Like, I would call traditional therapy relies on the therapist being the smartest person in the room and having this kind of, I would call it intersubjective dynamic, you know, like the therapist being a good fit, you know, and not bringing something of their personality that you know either gets in the way or takes over.
The reason I'm bringing it up because I've seen people go to as many as 5, 6, 7, 8 therapists before they say that they found that one for them and then it changed their life. And I've heard of people just going to the first one. So I'm just, thinking about personalities, and I'm thinking about, whether there's an empathy relationship there more than a sympathetic type relationship, things like that.
Yeah. So this is one of the things that is really powerful and important about TIR is in the traditional therapy. I mean, again, smartest person in the room, and they are doing the work, like interpreting and pointing things out and on and on. And in TIR, the client is the smartest person in the room. They are making connections because their experience, they're processing like nobody else can. Mm-hmm. And so that alone is a big difference. And so the method is that the facilitator is interested, but they are not the interesting one. Right? They don't have to draw the attention. And that allows then the other person to really be more empowered, right, to make sense, to do the interpretation. And at a visceral level, the result is very different. So in general, I want to see it, play out, that it shouldn't matter what TIR facilitator a person would go to because the process is – what helps the person to do their own work. They may be smart. I mean, I think in some ways I'm intelligent enough, but that's not the point.
That's a great point. Yeah.
So, I mean, I've had some good experiences with therapists and it's also felt like it really didn't get at the underlying stuff. And so I would say that for dealing with trauma, you need trauma-specific stuff. For dealing with good personal growth and, coaching, that's different. No doubt, many good therapists do good things.
Well, that's a good point to bring up because that's what NASC is here for. And this is exactly what I wanted to get to, is that, this is why we have you on tonight. This is exactly why we're all on here tonight, is to help guide people in that right direction. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a cartoon. I don't know why I thought of it right now, but it's a bunch of Buddhist monks, and they're at a rally, and they're saying, what do we want? And they say, inner peace. When do we want it? Now. It's like, well, I want people to have – I want people to have healing. I want people to have peace now.
Oh, that is funny. Oh, that's so funny. I could see it. I could absolutely see that. That is hilarious. But, going on from here, I mean, I want to get into the workbook situation and find out what's going on with that. We're down, like I said, we're never going to have enough time for this tonight. We have a lot to do. So I want you to just go on and tell us from here about, your workbook and everything else you got going so we can get involved.
Thank you. Back when I was in the middle of I'm going to put all my energy into creating resources because the only group that I knew about was the group of the people who had experienced sexual abuse by clergy. And so that's where the workbook language was focused. And it was essentially self-published, although I did have a contract with a big publisher in Mexico, and we translated it. And I need to circle back and find out, it's been several years, what's happened with that. So in short, it's not in bookstores now. And, it's probably it would be useful to revise and, have it be more available. But I have several cases that I would love to give to NASCA or, anybody who is interested, because I've gotten really good feedback from several people who have used it, whether they're kind of people have the lived experience of all kinds of trauma, not just clergy stuff, because it comes from it's very like organic. It's inductive. It comes from experience,
right,
to say, yeah,
exactly,
there is a victim experience, and then there's a survivor experience, and they're different. And
right,
and then there's
mm-hmm.
something, people jump to, I'm going to be a thriver, right? But there's an in-between in my mind step.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So what does that look like,
yeah.
So there's, it is a map, and it kind of pulls in lots of others' good work, and kind of frameworks about learning and human development. It's got lots of little exercises, that can help a person to kind of rethink their experience and kind of see not where they are on a particular place in a map, but just how we have this ongoing unlayering to do. And once we then address it and really do the work to integrate
right.
it so that we don't, we have the memories, but we don't have the toxic stuff underneath
mm-hmm.
of it.
Absolutely.
So some people have used that with a therapist.
Yeah, absolutely. But I was going to tell you, just, being a 45-year survivor myself of clergy abuse, I would definitely be interested in everything you have to offer. No question. No question about that. So anything I can ever do, I'm definitely here for you, to do whatever it takes, okay? Yeah. But this is awesome, man. I love this workbook thing. I mean, it is great, So you have a lot coming up. Like right now, you said November?
Yes, and again, I'll reach out to Bill. Maybe that can be included somehow for people. So right now it's limited to just to 8 participants because it's real hands-on. It's a 4-day workshop, and the first part is so important. It's just learning. We have to understand how trauma works in us, and we can see then that there's a history of people trying to understand, how our behaviors work, So it's called it's not metapsychology, it's applied metapsychology. So it's taking the idea of, Freud and Jung and Pavlov and Rogers and others to say, okay, now how do we use that, right? So there's that background, and then there's the preparation, which I think is super important. For a person to be a viewer, to do their own work on traumatic experiences or on very stressful ongoing situations productively, a person has to have ego strength, right? So everybody can't just jump into a traumatic experience. So you have to be able to sit with things that are very uncomfortable and may bring up, surprising stuff.
Right.
So part of the training is that they call them communication exercises, where people practice, being present and really listening and not judging and not reacting, because we're conditioned in good ways to react, to smile or to nod or to say things. Again, for a facilitator, we're just being a container that is very interested but not interesting. So there's that practical thing, and then there's one technique which is really, really helpful called unblocking, because if you imagine a spider web, there's one guy, for example, that I'm working with right now. He's a respiratory therapist in a hospital setting. And this guy's an awesome human being and has been through all kinds of life traumas. And on top of it, in the pandemic, he's had to deal with all kinds of, terrible things with COVID. And so unblocking, I explained that the spiderweb network of trauma, you know, after sometimes just doing some unlayering, some unblocking of ongoing stressors, we see that all kinds of other issues that are significant that had initially a lot of charge, often those get relaxed somehow because there's this weird, amazing connection between past and present in ways that we don't, they're not obvious. We, you know, they're unconscious, right? So, so this unblocking technique is one thing we learn, and there's a process to it, and then there we practice it. So people experience it in the workshop, and they get a sense of like, oh yeah, I'm normally aware of the top layer of things, like, you know, one of those plates in the cafeteria, and then you take that off, and there's another one that pops up, and then there's another one, and this is the idea of like we're creating a space and a process where people can start to do a self-study in ways that we don't often. And it's just really cool. I mean, it's one of my favorite things.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
And then,
absolutely.
Yeah. And
yeah, I mean, look, that's as hands-on as it gets. That is as hands-on as it gets right there. You know, when people can actually participate in some of it and learn about it, and isn't that the most important part? And that's the way I love what you're doing about this, is that you're really bringing them in to educate.
Yeah.
You know, without understanding, there is no understanding. You know, it's like beating your head up against a wall. You know, it's not going to happen until somebody, and you have to be good at that. And I can tell that's exactly who you are. You know how to do this. And when you have eight people, you know, imagine just one, you know, much less eight. So, you know, I mean, look at it. That is tremendous, man.
Well, maybe in the future the workshops will be bigger, but for right now, because it's part of my certification, you know, it's got to be, like, manageable, but...
Dr. Wilma, real quick question. Is there any way that is the workbook incorporated with this, with the course that you're doing?
No, the workbook was... No, I mean, I've done other things that I never actually got out in public that I intended, you know, like, here's a workshop that uses the workbook, and it's, you know, and here's a bunch of videos, and so in the past, and it's been a while, I know I put a bunch of energy into creating things, but the workshop is separate from, that's a different group that is a certifying body, and my workbook is, you know, hopefully useful and all that, but it's not part of this.
Just two totally different things. Awesome. Thanks for clarifying that.
Yeah. And I think the workbook can be, you know, good over time for people on their own or with others, and kind of like, you know, they can pick and choose what they want. But
now with that workbook, though, you know how you said, and I agree, we're all layers. You know, once you get through one layer, later on here comes another layer that you have to work on. Is this workbook something that you could do? You go through it once, and then you come back again and you realize there's something else that, you know, you maybe should address. Would you be able to go back through that same workbook again and have it help you just as much as it did the first time?
Well, I don't know about as much, but definitely in a different way. I mean, I've there's this there's a service that people who have written published articles, research articles, sometimes get referenced, you know, in other people's research. And every once in a while I get a note like, you know, years back I would write, you know, academic articles. And it's really very validating, very sweet to have, you know, oh, these people referenced something I wrote. Well, I had the privilege of talking with a group, must have been a year ago, a Survivors Network of those abused by priests. They still have support group meetings. And I spoke to this group, and this one person showed up with the workbook, and like every page was written and like highlighted, and you know, he had cut and taken pages out and put them in different places, like just to totally make it her own. So yeah, the workbook I think could be useful in lots of ways. Yeah, that's what I was saying. What a gift, you know. And then so this is I mean that's the gift of having learned from experiences and been able to to make them available to others. And I think that's mm-hmm. what I think this show is about, you know, in this community is,
right.
You know, we learn through our experiences and then it's
right.
in the sharing that they really
right.
become valuable, invaluable,
and
like
Dr. Romo,
learning wisdom.
Dr. Romo, I wanted to ask you one thing too, you know, while we're on to this, because I think that what you have is going to go a long, long way with a lot of people and with your community in specific, okay? What I want to ask you is, you know, we're both, you know, victims of clergy abuse and in the environment that you're in, and now, you know, that I see with everything that you do, especially being a minister and everything else, how do you feel about when a young boy, okay, that may be in the community is you know, having issues with being abused, okay? And the fact that, you know, you are a minister, okay? Do you look for signs every day of your life by looking for those isolated kids? You know, and the reason why I'm asking you is because being from San Diego, okay, I know that there has to be a large, I'd say, population, you know, of integrated people there, you know. And I know from the history of that, if you look back in history, I think it was the Gonzalez family, if I'm not mistaken, brought that into the Supreme Court where they, you know, were to be treated as equal and everything else that happened, okay? So, you know, being on that road, okay, of being a integrated young person or, you know, family, so to speak, do you run into that where you are right now or in the past of seeing that, you know, in the environment?
My assumption is that abuse goes on not just through clergy, but of course in families. I mean, 60% of
right.
sexual abuse anyway is by people in those inner circles.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know from my own experience, it's sometimes noticeable, you know, someone seems to be a bit more either fragile or a bit like too
mm-hmm.
hyper, whatever, strong. You might wonder, or if a person is isolated a lot, or they have, you know, habits of like staying at school a
mm-hmm.
long time, or
mm-hmm.
But you know, for those there are signs like that people can pay attention to, and I know that the world of human trafficking is huge, and
right.
if people pay attention, they might notice signs of individuals who might be, you know, in that situation. But I think that the reality is that a lot of people, and myself as a case study, I mean, do their best to look like I'm okay, and
mm-hmm.
do their nice people who are either disconnected or just really repressing and just, you know, doing their best to not draw attention to themselves as having something wrong with them. And so that
mm-hmm.
makes it tough.
Right.
And so I just go with, I think in general, we can go with universal kind of precautions, knowing that
mm-hmm.
not just everybody's got some trauma in general.
Being
mm-hmm.
the person that you are there, has anybody ever came forward to you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Great.
And that's you know.
And yeah, how did you handle that? How did you handle that for, say, the first time that was brought to you?
Approach might be different from others in that I think a typical response, and people mean really well, and I don't want to disparage, you know, this,
mm-hmm.
you know, empathetic response, but people may say, I'm so sorry that happened to you, you know,
mm-hmm.
or,
mm-hmm.
you know, and for church people might say, oh, you know, I hope, you know, you'll come back to this church or something. Like ways to want to show caring, but you know, my response is like, thank you for sharing. Mm-hmm. Thank you for trusting me. However I can be a resource and support, I'm with you. It doesn't like put another person in like, oh, there's something wrong with you. It's like, hey, I get it, mm-hmm. you know.
Did y'all hear with that? Listen to what he just said.
Yep.
He did not say I'm sorry, okay? How important is that? This is the difference.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, when somebody says, oh, I'm so sorry you went through it, you feel the need to go, oh, don't worry, I got this, you know? And when you really don't, but you feel like, you know, it's like, oh, okay, thank you for being sorry, but, you know, yeah. So that's really awesome.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's not as as common, but I know for myself, it means something. You know, I don't want somebody to tell me that my experience is somehow like too bad. You know, like I can tell that, or I can, or I can say. And now I am who I am because I've worked with that, and it's gold in a way that. That it wasn't years ago. Right? I'm not coming from a place of pain and, you know, victimization and surviving. I am coming from, like, I'm teaching from my experience and, or at least making it available, as we should say, but, you know, not for anybody to fix, but to share, to make it, to normalize.
Right.
You know, let's not have shame.
I do get that. You had said earlier, that you weren't coming at this with Pollyanna glasses. And I have to say that all the time because I do get that a lot. And I'm sure I'm not the only survivor that gets that. They're like, how can you smile and how can you giggle and laugh? And it's because, you know, you learn how to deal with it. That's who I am, and you can't change that. But I do get that a lot, you know, those Pollyanna glasses. And, yes, I do have them. But, it's okay. And how would you say something to somebody who actually goes, how are you so okay about it? And it's not that I'm okay. It's just that I'm dealing with it. How would you explain that to somebody who's really questioning that?
Well, in part, it's like I kind of resist because I don't want to have to engage in, you know, explaining myself to somebody.
Exactly.
But, you know, another response is that, like, I've done some work, okay? You know, how do you talk to an athlete and say, like, how do you run so fast? It's like, you know, I practiced, you know, I've done some serious work here.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to be, like ego inflating. I'm just saying, you know, we've all done some work, you know, let's acknowledge that matters. And hopefully, you know, the way that it's expressed is in a way that is compassionate, in a way that is, you know, bringing some joy, you know.
That's the key to me is how it is expressed. It has to be because nobody's the same. You know, nobody is the same. And people are fragile, you know, when it comes to this, you know. And you have to learn how to deal with each individual.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you have to deal with a group of people, you know, that's really extensive in being almost a mediator and a babysitter at times, too. I hate to say that, but, you know, it's just controlling the environment can be really, really tough, really tough.
You're a good people. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
And then, Ramon, I just wanted to get one more time because you did state the date for your workshop. Could you state those again so our listeners can hear that and be aware of when the workshop will be available online?
Yeah. It's the two weekends on Pacific time, November 6th and 7th and 13th and 14th. And it's from 10 a.m. Pacific time. I know that's, you know, kind of late for East Coast folks.
You broke up just a little bit. It's 10 a.m. to what?
To 6 p.m. Pacific time.
Okay. Thank you.
And yeah, I welcome, you know, people. If not on this one, then the next one I think will be in January, and then my expectation is that I'm certified. And you know, I recently talked with someone in my own organization about offering a workshop for social workers or chaplains, because one, it would be good for them personally,
right.
and also to be a support for peers. But and then in another healthcare organization, again, just early conversations, but to say, you know, everybody's got stress and trauma, and anything that we can do to really help relieve it is a good thing. Right? So the big idea for me is like the democratization of healing, right? So it's not only the medical model,
right.
And it's not only, you know, it's not to discount that and discount, you know, people who are therapists and psychologists, but there are so many different tools that are also available and could be available. And I think this is one that, senior trainer that I'm working with, she's in Canada, and she said she's done several trainings with First Nations groups. So here would be Native Americans, there is First Nations. And lots of people from different traditions, and they find it to be very congruent. Right? So it's not just a kind of Western, I'll call it a colonizing model, right? It's something that is much more client-centered, you know, or really that's the foundation. You know, it's not saying here's the plan. It's saying like what happened to you. And what are you interested in working on?
That is great, great.
Yeah,
well,
so,
listen, you know, guys, we have about 30 minutes left, okay, almost. And I do want to take this time to reintroduce everybody and to do a small recap on the show tonight, if it's okay with everyone. Again, my name is John Anderson, your host tonight, along with Deborah Hunt. And Dr. Romo was here also with us, too. Dr. Romo, he's from San Diego, California. He's an educator. He's a consultant, an author, a minister, and he promotes prevention and healing from child sex abuse, okay? And particularly abused by religious authorities or in the context of religious settings, okay, which is pretty big if you want to look at the broad picture there. You know, Dr. Romo has a workbook he wrote. It's called Healing the Sexual Abused Heart, a workbook for survivors and thrivers and supporters. You know, is integration of various disciplines, and he's become certified as a TIR facilitator. Okay, TIR facilitator. This is traumatic incident reduction. Okay. Which is such an important part of everyday healing and survivor methods in our way of trying to find different therapies and healing. He has a 4-day online workshop, and also, you know, he is a survivor himself. Okay, so you have to realize that when you are a survivor. And you're working with survivors, that it takes these kind of people, you know, in order for us to get the education that we need at first to start that healing process, which is, to me, the most important thing in understanding, you know, exactly what is going on with the whole process. It can be very, very intriguing for a lot of people. And on the other hand, it can go, you know, the other way. But this is what NASC is all about. And this is why we want to be here for everyone, to help you all through every stage, okay, you know, our healing. And this is what it's all about in recovering. And, again, this is scan number 2774. So, you know, all the way up till this moment, you know, Dr. Romo has told us a lot about what all he's been through and what he's doing to help prevent you know, any type of abuse of any kind, basically. But, you know, with his environment and his location, he has his work ahead of him. And if anybody out there, if you're listening tonight, I want to urge you to try to support Dr. Romo and his cause. And you can get in touch with him through several ways. Dr. Romo, you want to tell us about how they can get in touch with you?
I cut out for a minute. Am I back?
Yes, you are.
Yes, you are.
Yes. Okay. So, yeah, through the website is a good thing. That's my name, jaimeromo.org. And there's some – I got to revise it, but still there's some information about trauma in general, and there's a link to the sign-up for the workshop. And there's a place where you should be able to contact me, you know, via email. And yeah, I want to be a resource. In fact, I mentioned earlier I connected with this group after so many years called Males for Trauma Recovery.
Right.
These are some really experienced people who have done lots of work about trauma and recovery and how that is layered in.
Uh-huh.
The male,
so it's
kind of
male
identity
for
experience.
Trauma
so,
recovery.
Yeah.
So it's,
yeah,
male
because,
for trauma recovery. Okay, I was writing this down just to follow up
yeah.
with it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And we, what we talked about was, you know, hey, we were kind of excited that a government agency would say we need to understand, not to minimize the damage that men do, but we need to understand. How to change the dynamics of, you know, male violence and toxic masculinity and health issues, and so we were excited about the possibility. And then that when that disbanded, we decided this last time we met, just a week ago, said we should create our own what's it called, a technical resource center, a technical advisory kind of center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I'm just thinking there are so many ways that we can share our learning. And I lost my train of thought, I'll be honest with you.
No, that's okay. Actually, what we were trying to do was get us the information to get in touch with you on anything, you know, as far as like your site.
Yeah.
And you were going to revise that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
so
do
there
you
are
have other
that I can tap into?
Okay. Yeah, because I noticed that you also had what was it, healingthesexuallyabusedheart.com, right?
Oh, I guess
I
have
think
that
was
a name. I have that anymore.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't
know. You
might think I have that. So there was a time where, so there's an expression called if you want to go fast, go alone.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go far, go together. And I think that is true for call it business and entrepreneurial stuff, as well as for healing work. And so I didn't have any business background. I was like just creating stuff. And so I had these different websites and I had these different projects, but I was really going alone or trusting, you know, very small, limited group of people to guide. So, yeah, so some of those things like that website may not be active because, now I'm doing different things. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I so appreciate
I can
you know,
that.
Looking
I
for
think
ways
all of
to,
so. Yeah, we're all on that boat together. In fact, I need to update a lot of my things too because we're so busy all the time. We don't really, you know, think about some of those little things, you know. But I just happen to notice that. But I do want to let you know too that being, you know, I am a 45-year survivor myself. Is that I actually have I'm the vice president of an organization called SVSA. Okay. So I'm just letting you know that we're here for you, too. I'm here for you, you know, with anything that we can ever help you with, no matter what. And I think, you know, the main cause here is that, you know, with NASCA and other organizations around this world, you know, we have to put an end to the abuse, period, you know.
Yeah.
And we have to find ways, we have to find ways to help heal, you know, the people that are still have yet to come forward, you know. These are some of the things that when people listening to us tonight, it may just encourage them to do that, you know. Even if it's through a friend or a family member or a school, if, you know, and what Penelope says every time, if you see something, say something, you know, and you don't have to even give your name.
Say that too.
You know, you can be anonymous. You can reach out to anyone, but, you know, there is a process, and that's what NASCA does. And this is why we bring, you know, people, you know, such as you. I mean, Dr. Roma, you are, to me, just the perfect example of who we need in this world, you know. And I'll always be your friend. I'll always be here as a co-worker of any kind, you know, and most of all, I think that I want to be a partner with you too, you know. And when I decide that I want to be with someone that I dedicate my life to it, that's who I am, you know. And you have a great cause, so I'll always you know, be thankful for you being there. Being that I'm hoping that you have the West Coast covered, you know, whoever has that part of the world, I've got the South.
Yes,
East,
I do.
Know, Bill's in PA, you know, Penelope's up in the north, you know, the Northwest. So, you know, we're getting there. You know, we just got to keep working together with these beautiful people that we have on the show, you know, and this is what it is. It's a family, but it's a family for the right cause.
Yes.
And, you know, it's been a long time, guys, since we've had, you know, these types of people come together and actually make a difference. You know, we're not just talking anymore. We're getting things done. You know, I have personally helped with every association that I could possibly help with, but there's only so much time in a day, you know. I'd like to focus more on the things that we're doing and the causes of the people that we bring on this show. From anything from fostering to, you know, abuse of any kind. I mean, we are going to be here for everyone, and that's the main thing that I want everybody to know, is that we have people here, such as Dr. Romo, that's going to make a difference in your life. And sometimes all it takes is that one phone call, you know. And, you know, and speaking of phone calls, you know, we have a dial-in number. We don't have much time left tonight. But if y'all want to write this number down for next time, it's area code 646-595-2118, okay? So that's our guest call-in number for next time. And believe me, look, if you ever want to call in and participate in the show and even talk to Dr. Romo, you know, anything that you have to say or ask is vitally important. It doesn't matter how small, you know, because, in fact, the smaller things is the things that make more importance of the recovery and the healing of everyone that's been abused. Without the education that Dr. Romo provides for us, we don't have an avenue or a platform to go to. Okay, so this is what he does, and he's just the perfect person for this. But, you know, we have about 15 minutes left, okay? Deborah, would you like to come in and just you know, say something on tonight, and we'll leave a few minutes. We might leave you a couple minutes, Doctor, for you to say something. But Deborah, if you want to come in for a few minutes and offer any comments or suggestions or questions or anything you want to say.
Absolutely. And again, Dr. Rom, thank you so much for being on tonight. The information and everything you're doing is absolutely just amazing. It really is. And you're reaching so many people who, obviously, it's going to be exponential as we keep this going. And I love how you're going about it. I'm really interested in finding out the ins and outs about your TIR program. I really am. And again, we're going to get that information out for you. I know I'm getting in touch with Bill as we speak. But honestly, what a great show. What you do is just amazing, and I just really appreciate you being here. I also wanted to just put out there that, you know, there's so many resources that can be reached through our website, and that is at NASCA.org. That is NAASCA.org. And there's so many resources out there available for anybody listening, anybody who wants to get in touch with NASCA, anybody who wants to volunteer, because we are a family here at NASCA. And John, I know how you know feel about that too, right? We're all family here.
Absolutely.
And we welcome anybody.
Absolutely.
We welcome anybody with open arms and with, you know, just the compassion that we have as survivors as well, because we're a family of survivors, and we will continue that as long as I'm here with NASCA. I've been here with NASCA for over 3 years. And, you know, like you said in the beginning of the show, John, NASCA, it does change your life because it does offer you that hope and healing that, you know, there's not a lot out there. There's a lot of different programs, but we are worldwide and we're here to help. And, you know, again, I don't want to take up any time from Dr. Romo, but again, thank you, Dr. Romo, and I hope to get in touch with you after the show, whether it's over Facebook. And yeah, absolutely. Because
please donate
I'm really interested. Oh, yes, absolutely, if you can, because we are a 501c3, so we are self-funding. So, and you can go ahead and put in any donations through the website. So with that, I will let you gentlemen finish up the show. And again, thank you so much, Dr. Romo.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Deborah, very much. Yeah, so, Dr. Lister, we have, you know, about 10 minutes left for you. This is going to be, you know, your gemstone here. So, you know, I want you to take the next, you know, 10 minutes to, you know, just to tell everyone, you know, about your message and where you are today and what your goals are too, okay?
Well, again, thank you. I was struck, you said a little bit ago something about, you know, we have to end child abuse. I mean, we have to, like, stop it. And that's, I think there are parts to that. There's always the intervention. If you see something, say something. That's important, of course. And then there's the accountability side, which is also important. But then there's this other side, I would call it prevention. And I think of, you know, California, these horrible fires, right? And they're the result of drought. I mean, if the ground had more groundwater underneath, and the fires wouldn't be so prevalent. And so there's something like in our whole environment, I think that's super important. I mean, we're a country and a society that responds to after the fact something bad happened. But that doesn't change the conditions that created those things that happened. And so that's the bigger vision picture, I think, you know, that all of us participate in. It's like, not only do we want to intervene and hold accountability so that there is some kind of, you know, teaching, you know, but they're also, how do we prepare people to go from being oblivious to being maybe uncomfortable bystanders to being, you know, active allies? And so I think that's why it's so important for people like on this show and this program and other ways for people to give their experience, to normalize, to, you know, make real for people that there's systemic problems. Right. And
it is.
The ways
it's
that
important,
we
I
need
think.
To break through that.
I think
allows
that we make them feel comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, I
so
think it's important
the idea
we make
of
them
like,
feel comfortable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this idea of going upstream, right? You know, not just pulling people out of the water from a shipwreck or something, that whatever image, but to go upstream and find out why are people in this situation. And I think there's a peer support movement that's been going on for years that is powerful. And you know, when people have lived experience, they should always be in places to help with policy and to help with education and so on. And so I think that's where this group, again, is really valuable, where people then can go from knowledge to action, you know, go and through the, our own process to be able then to be allies in a way that does not have us burn out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's where this healing process and the work that we do for ourselves is super important. And
it is. So one of, You know, one thing I want to tell you real quick while we're on to that is that I don't know if you're aware of this, but, you know, being the position I am, that, that I do several things through my organizations, okay? But one main thing that, that I focus on is trying to abolish statute of limitations, okay? And I did get to Louisiana, where I'm from, I did get the Louisiana statute of limitations abolished here, which was amazing that that happened. So we even have a three-year window on top to, you know, to go after criminal charges also, okay? You know, I don't know, you know, what your statute is there in California. I should be up to that standard by now. But I'm just curious, have you ran into that situation with someone as far as their age coming forward versus them, you know, being over the statute of limitations?
Yeah, there was something, I think, a couple of years ago that was in the works that one of the senators brought that opened a new window, basically, and it made it more like some of the states where it's not an age amount of years that's significant, but when a person became aware of their past abuse.
Right.
But that, I don't think, was at the time – finalized it. Somehow it got derailed.
That said, that's the case. It normally does when that happens.
I'm pretty sure there is another round of cases, at least where related to clergy, that's a big focus, is going on. But I'm sorry, I don't know the detail of it. But that has come, It's a process.
Yeah,
it's
a
struggle.
It is. That is.
And
the
I'll have to say
thing.
That the main people who opposed that legislation were church folks, Catholic church folks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not saying that all Catholics are not good people. Just there were. There's a lot of money that came from that organization.
And that's exactly what it is. Go ahead.
I just want to offer a couple of like big images related to. This work.
Okay.
And it's just as a way of both for people who are maybe feeling kind of broken down by the trauma that they've experienced and how it's impacted them, as well as maybe on a larger level. And that's, again, why I'm so excited to have these reconnections with people who years ago we said, yes, let's work, let's make change. And so the first image is that of the, you know, the metamorphosis process of the caterpillar, you know, cocooned butterfly. That so it's not just the simple, probably not it's new information, but it's not just a simple like it goes into this cocoon and then it's a worm with wings. It's a really radical process to break down so that. Once they're in that cocoon, this like turbulent process turns whatever that caterpillar was into goo. And my understanding is that there's these things called imaginal cells that are in that insect. And when all the turbulent process is settled down, these imaginal cells, call them, wake up and they find each other. And then they use that goo to create this. Call it a quantitatively or qualitatively different thing. And I think I say that with the idea of like hearing you say we have people in different parts of the country, and I know there are a lot of people who are doing this work, and it may have felt like a long time that people are working in isolation and there's nothing but resistance to efforts to bring accountability and transparency and end abuse. Mm-hmm. But to say that people are finding each other, and we mm-hmm. will be we are part of this big process. So it's just a big metaphor, but I think it resonates.
Well, that's
with
beautiful,
me.
Man. That is beautiful. Absolutely, yes, love that.
And related to that, this other thing, and I speak to, like right now I happen to be sitting in the space where many years ago I remember being balled up on the floor weeping because I felt, you know, like my
right where you
spirit,
are right
my
now?
Sense of spiritual self. Pardon? Yeah,
right,
I mean, I live
right
in the
now?
Same house, right? Yeah, and so I'm in front of, you know, in this little office, and... You know, I felt like my spirit was dead. Mm-hmm. The image that I have is, I wish I remember her name. There's an activist who talks about love as a spiritual basis and power for activism. And
mm-hmm.
she's the image of transition, as in childbearing. And
right.
That's I, now... I know nothing about childbearing, right? I don't have that experience. I understand that time called transition is super painful, and it seems like it's going to kill, and it's the end. And in hospice, we use that word transition as well, as when a person is at the end of life, and then they transition. They have a new experience. And this idea that the womb... I mean, is it a tomb? Is the darkness? Is the sense of something being over? Is that the real story, or could it be a womb that is actually that's the background? That's the condition of, you know, pain or despair of getting to that bottom layer of trauma that we need to recognize in order to then become something new. And
right.
So I offer that as just, you know, for anybody who's dealing with the difficulties of life or a lifetime of trauma or all kinds of things, to say, yeah, there's more than what we might think at this point. It may feel hopeless, but it's not. It may feel like we're alone, but we're not.
That's such a beautiful, beautiful way to actually paint a painting or a vision of what we are and what we want and what we want to try to help people to get through. You know, you're looking at stages. You know, you're looking at the beauty at the end, you know, and it is a process, and it doesn't happen overnight, you know. And the thing about it is that you have to know that you're not alone, okay? No one is alone. We are here for you. This is what Dr. Romo is saying. You know, there is the light at the end of that tunnel. You know, and you know, for him to, you know, paint that picture should say a lot of things in what we do and what we hope we can send a message to everyone is that NASC is here as a family. We're here for you and to help you guide you in that road of healing, transparency. But, you know, there is some things, and we want to be clear about that. We want everyone to be educated on everything that we have to offer so we can help you in the right way. And, again, we have about 45 seconds left for tonight. I want to thank everybody, you know, for being here tonight and having this opportunity to host tonight also. Deborah Hunt from Arizona. Love you so much. Thank you for being here with me tonight.
Thank you, John.
And our I mean, I can't even put a special guest before his name. You know, it's Dr. Jane Romo, okay? What an extensive individual. Thank you so much, Doctor, for being here. And we can't wait to see what you're doing next, and we want to be a part of what you're doing, okay?
Thank you. Last real quick thing for me to say, my favorite quote is, if you're here to help me, you're wasting your time. But if you're here because your liberation is bound up in mine.
Good night, everybody.